Flaming the station. Welcome to the station, the Babylon 5 podcast.
All right, and welcome to episode number 7 of the Station Podcast. This is Mitch.
This is Steve.
And today's episode is The War Prayer, and this episode is written by the legendary Dorothy C. Fontana from the original Star Trek series and dozens of others. She is absolutely brilliant, and she has never had a bad word come out of her fingers.
I'm trying to visualize that, and I'm not coming up with anything pretty.
Okay, the war prayer opens up, and we've got Shal Mayan talking with Delenn. Shal Mayan, I'm still not certain if Shal is her name or if that's a title, because Delenn is Delenn. Lanier is Lanier, and somehow Shal Mayan is Shal Mayan, two words, so we don't know. Anyway, they're talking about poetry, and that's because Shal Mayan is a poet.
She's also somebody who ostensibly holds a very prominent – she figures prominently within current Minbari culture. She's a famous poet. She's also a sort of a figure, a statesperson.
All poets are like that. Minbari treat their artists – much better than humans do.
Yeah, but it's implied that Shal Mayan is exceptionally successful.
She's a cultural treasure.
Yeah.
And we have to assume that all poets are like that and other artisans. They're talking and it's getting late and Shal Mayan wants to go back to her quarters and sleep. So she goes back alone and she gets attacked by what we later discover is the Home Guard. Home Guard is attacking prominent aliens on Babylon 5, Mars, Earth, and elsewhere. They are pro-Earth fringe groups. This is the 6th attack on a prominent alien in the last 2 weeks. They all have the same MO and the numbers for Home Guard are growing daily.
Yeah, there is lots of fear, bigotry, violence, and hatred. You know, I like this idea because it, you know, it doesn't portray, you know,
all humans being accepting.
Right. It doesn't portray that humanity has evolved past its own worst interests. It keeps humanity's failings within the spectrum. We haven't outgrown what makes us, unfortunately, part of who we are.
Sadly, that is true.
So, you know, this episode is – I also like the fact that this episode tackles that problem, which is a problem that, you know, is very real, not with aliens, just amongst ourselves in real life. But it's also more – this episode is more geared towards displaying how we have to deal with this. This is an internal problem and we just have to go ahead and – grit our teeth and deal with it. And that's what this episode centers on, is dealing with this atrocious problem.
There's a tie between this and a much later episode. Garibaldi is sent to check on a major disturbance, and it turns out to be Jakar. Jakar is standing up on a platform. He's giving a speech, doing his very best to separate the humans and the aliens, to completely rip them apart. And he's standing on the very exact spot that 3 years later Sheridan stands to give his speech after returning from the dead. Will you stand together, bringing all the races together? Here, Garibaldi is trying to tear them apart, and Sheridan later stands in the exact same spot and brings them all together.
Garibaldi's trying to tear them apart?
Sheridan. Jakar is trying to rip them apart, and Sheridan brings them
right,
together.
Right, okay, later. Yeah, I thought that's what you meant.
I may not have said it, but that's what I meant.
So, yeah, that's very symbolic. Of course, the symbolism isn't really appreciated until you see Sheridan giving that speech at the end of season – well, beginning of season 4.
Yeah. When he comes back. Okay. Well, we'll get to that later because that's a few years down the road.
Hopefully it won't take us that long to get there.
Yeah. Veer
– it might.
Veer has been sending letters home and he's been lying to his family, telling them that he is the ambassador. And I have to just wonder, is his family incredibly stupid? Because one check anywhere, and they would discover, oh, hey, Londo is the ambassador, Veer's just the aide. And we find out later on in Transit Veer that his family sent him there knowing that he was just going to be the aide. So apparently he's lying and they're very gullible.
Well, he's also sending letters to younger cousins who probably don't busy themselves with learning about the specifics of Centauri politics. He's probably preying on the naivete of somebody who's younger than him, who he also yearns to impress, because it's very heavily implied all throughout that Veer's family don't think very highly of him.
No.
Which is unfortunate.
But Kieran does.
Yeah.
And Kieran is his cousin, and he's got a girlfriend named Aria, and they are wanting to be together. So they come to the station because their families have arranged marriages for both of them, and they don't want to marry other people. They want to marry each other, and it's the law, and it's tradition. You will marry whoever your parents tell you to through arranged marriages. Now, for 1,000 years, Centauri marriages have been arranged, not for love. This is the same time frame as the previous Shadow War. We already know about the green and purple Drazi leadership ceremony was created by the Shadows. Is it possible that the Shadows influence Centauri marriage traditions? And if so, why?
There's a lot that goes on. Well, there's a lot that we hear about.
1,000 years ago.
Yeah. And it's cool the way that it's written into this, you know. You know, me and Mitch both really, really love studying ancient Egypt, and we don't know a whole lot about it because most of the historical data was destroyed over the last 5,000 years. So all we know is what we kind of hear about through what we've discovered, through legends, through myths and things like that. And here in Babylon 5, the writers are able to sort of set up an atmosphere where there are legends, and it's just part of the background noise, if you will, of what's going on in the current present storyline, timeline, I should say. And we keep on hearing repeated references to a point in history 1,000 years previous to when this timeline takes place, and just the stories that come. And some things are explained pretty thoroughly, other things are implied. Some things you never know if they were true or not, but the great thing about it is it gets your imagination going. You know, humans were not out in space 1,000 years previous. We wandered into this only in the last couple hundred years.
Well, one was.
Well, okay, true, technically speaking. But I mean, it's in terms of our involvement in the larger community of races, we're new. And so it brings us into the perspective that we would be in. We're new to this whole thing, and we just keep hearing these stories about there was, you know, sometime about 1,000 years previous to when this takes place was a period of great consequence amongst all the spacefaring races. They were all together. They were all involved in something. But over time, all that's left are legends.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's just a little tangent there because, you know, most of what we know about Centauri culture is based on
Londo
talking about events that happened 1,000 years previous. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we know something about Centauri culture, the fact that there's arranged marriages and that there's a reason for this, and it's just accepted. This is just the way it is, and these two miscreants have the audacity to assume that if they love each other, they should be able to be together.
And that's what they think, and Londo thinks just the opposite. He's had 3 arranged marriages with Pestilence, Famine, and Death.
Yes. His nicknames for his 3 wives, Pestilence, Famine, and Death.
That's right. Who we later meet in the episode Soulmates in Season 2. And
awesome.
I love that.
Awesome episode.
Jane Carr is awesome. Anyway, back to War Prayer. Shalmayan is attacked, and then Kieran is later attacked as well. He is in med lab, and Londo is talking about how he is going to learn to live without love. And Shalmayan asks, "You mean like you did?"
Yeah.
And it cuts him right out.
One of the coolest lines I've from the series, this stuck with me out of everything else, was when Shalmayan is having that conversation with Ambassador Mallari, and she says to him very patiently but firmly, "I have traveled far and I've seen much, and what I've learned is that all races are best defined by their capacity and their need for love." And to which Londo responds, and they will learn to live without it. To which she responds, like you did?
Yep.
And that's a very poignant episode.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, a poignant moment within the episode.
I know what you meant.
So, now we've got the home guard. We've got Sinclair hating the fact that he has to even acknowledge the existence of this problem. But he deals with it. And the way he does it is
working with Susan's ex-boyfriend.
Who shows up.
His name is Malcolm Biggs. And he doesn't realize it, or they don't realize at first that he's part of this home guard. But thanks to finding out, tracking a gentleman in Medlab who's had issues, they end up finding out that he is part of Home Guard and is on Babylon 5 to recruit others. And they always like to recruit people in power. So Susan arranges for him to be at a meeting with Sinclair. And in a public forum, Sinclair disses one of the fish heads. And, okay, they've got real names, but I'm calling them fish heads because that's what they are.
They look kind of funny in those. They have fins on their heads. That's, what are they called, the Abai? That's
fish heads, roly-poly fish heads. And that actually ties in because Bill Mumy, who plays Lanier, sang that song. You know that, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I do now.
Okay.
So, yeah, all of a sudden, Sinclair is pretending to be racist.
Yeah.
Basically, and he's doing this so he can ingratiate himself to the home guard so that he can get in and disrupt their plan.
Right.
Their plan, I would have loved to have seen them try to pull this off, especially with Kosh, was to assassinate all of the ambassadors on Babylon 5, which would signal them to also go ahead and
do the same on other planets.
Right. And now I really would like to have seen this ragtag group of arrogant humans try to assassinate Kosh.
Good luck with that.
That would have been hilarious. So, yeah.
And in order to do that, they need some sort of a signal that Sinclair really is in with this group.
They need to test his loyalty.
Right. So at the end, Sinclair and Susan are in this cargo bay, Cargo Bay 5, with Malcolm. They've got the fish head on the floor, and she's begging for her life, going, please, Commander, please have mercy on me. The scanners alert their buddies to Garibaldi's team that's on their way. Garibaldi knocks out Malcolm and grabs Susan and runs behind a bunch of boxes that are on the other side of the room. So on one side of the room, you've got the bad guys from Home Guard. On the other side of the room, you've got Sinclair and Susan. And in the middle of the room, on her knees, is the fish head. He never bothered to bring her with him. He just left her there in the middle of the room in the crossfire. Oh, I love that Veer finally got a spine in this episode right before the whole shoes speech. He talks back to Londo.
Yeah, and you can see him gearing himself up.
You know? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because he's generally pretty timid and doesn't dare open his mouth. And when he does, he is pretty violently reprimanded.
Yeah. And after he does this, he gets this horrified look on his face like, oh, crap, what did I just do?
Yeah.
I'm going to be on the slowest transport home. And
but, you know, his speech, probably because he was – Londo was pretty softened up by his dressing down by Shalmayan.
Which is when he says, my shoes no longer fit.
And then Veer's just like, what the hell are you talking about?
Exactly. And he gives that whole speech
It's a good speech. One of my complaints against Joe's writing is that sometimes it's a little self-indulgent. Joe loves to watch the words flow onto the paper. Sometimes he's just a little long-winded. Sometimes he's a little too melodramatic. And I'm going to say that the story that Londo told about when he approached his father and found him crying, that his shoes were too tight, but it doesn't matter because he'd forgotten how to dance, that's pretty poignant. It's pretty emotional stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was delivered with a little too much flair. Just a little.
It's Londo in the first season. Flair doesn't begin to cover it.
Oh, no. It's a little excessive. But what this also gives Londo's character some dimension. Mm-hmm. We've seen surprises from Jakar and other characters. And in this one, Londo's facade, which we can tell all the way from the gathering that his pomp and his flair and his image is just a front. He's a very insecure person. And that insecurity, as we will see, is going to consume him to pretty horrible ends later in the series. But in this instance, we see that he has a conscience. We see that he has a heart, and that his rigid adherence to tradition and to the way things are supposed to be and to upholding things
actually ties in with the end of the episode.
Yeah. And it still, his adherence to these things just crumbles when somebody actually appeals to the I was about to say the human part of him, but I think you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. But yeah, he decides after giving the shoes speech that there is actually something that he can do, and he's going to send Kieran and Arya back home with a relative of his, and they are going to be fostered, and they're going to be taught in the ways of tradition. And then once they've reached a certain point and his relative has decided, okay, this is as far as they can go, he's going to give them permission to marry whoever they want to. And if they want to marry each other, even if it's for something as foolish as love, that by all means they can do that. And they're absolutely stunned, and they say, well, what will our parents think? And Londo says, well, your parents are traditionalists, and this goes back way, 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 way long time ago before arranged marriages, and it will be a big insult to all of Centauri for them to refuse.
Yeah, they wouldn't dare.
Exactly.
You know, everything about the Centauri culture is based on status and family name.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why there is – ostensibly, that's why there is arranged marriages. This tradition of fostering is a way that they can circumvent that, and that's what they do. And it's a pretty touching little moment there.
It is.
So yeah, this episode in general, you know, it dealt with some nasty parts of humanity.
It did.
And
but it also showed that humans do have a better side to their nature.
And that humans will fight bitterly to defend the better side of their nature, because no, we don't want to be defined by our problems. We want to be defined, if anything,
by how we overcome them.
Exactly. And in this instance we did. And it's not a proud jor. Like I mentioned before, in real life, we're not proud of the fact that we have to deal with this, but we deal with it.
Yep.
And we don't celebrate the ability to deal with it. You know, sometimes you do a job, you do something, you're proud of it. You're like, hey, that felt great. In this instance, they dealt with this problem. They dealt with it very well. But there's no sense of accomplishment. There's no sense of pride. This is just, I cannot believe we have to frickin' do this. But we just grit our teeth and we solve the problem. And then we just move on, because that's what you do. Sometimes you just do what you have to do, and that's what was done. That's a little bit of my philosophical ranting about it.
Yep. Now, onto the cast list. You're going to find a TV show has a lot of people involved with it, all because of Danica McKellar's appearance. Danica in this episode played Arya. She is best known for playing a character called Winnie Cooper on The Wonder Years. More recently, she played a character called Elsie in The West Wing. She is also known now as a writer and director of short films. Tristan Rogers played Malcolm Biggs. He's also known as Robert Scorpio in General Hospital. Nancy Gran played Shalmayan. She is known best for her work on soap operas. She played Alexis Davis on General Hospital from 1996 through 2009. She also did 8 years on Santa Barbara as Julie. Michael Paul Chan played Roberts. He is the guy that Tristan, as Malcolm, tried to recruit in MedLab. He was Mr. Chong on The Wonder Years with Danica. He also played Manny Hopkins in Galaxis, and he currently plays Lieutenant Mike Tao on The Closer. Diane Adair plays Myla Shar. She also plays the Markov mom and a Narn mom in later episodes. Chuck Butto played a security officer. He's also recurring on Wonder Years as a cafeteria worker. His last credited role was in 2003.
Why are there so many Wonder Years alums in this?
Because of Danica.
Ah.
That's my guess. Mike Gunther played an alien. He is in the upcoming Star Trek movie. He is the stunt double for Chris Pine, who plays Captain Kirk. He's also done stunts on Stargate, Atlantis, and SG-1, Bones, Dollhouse, Heroes, Fallen, Underworld Angel, and a boatload of others. Richard Chavez plays Alvarez here. I know him best as Iron Horse in the War of the Worlds TV series in the first season. He did an episode of the second season, but we don't count that. He was also Chakotay's dad on Voyager. He was also in the first Predator movie as a character called Poncho.
Busy guy. Are you starting to notice that there's just this whole pool of actors? It was described to me once. You know, I work in music mainly, and in the entertainment industry, it's a huge pool of people, but it's very shallow. Yep. You're always running into somebody. People are always hooking up and working together. It's all about – you're starting to see the way these things work. It's kind of cool.
And being shallow ties into what I'm about to say. Rodney Eastman plays a character called Kieran Maroy. He was Joey in Nightmare on Elm Street 3 and 4. If you've seen his website recently, he's got updated pictures. He is insanely hot. He's gone from being this, yeah, whatever, to like mid-30s and insanely hot. Cool. So if you haven't checked out his website, RodneyEastman.com.
All right.
All right. And I think that'll wrap it up for this episode.
Yep. The war prayer. This was a good one. I'm not going to say it was as good as Mind War.
But no, but it's...
It's one of the better ones.
Yeah.
It's... I'm still reeling from having to deal with infection.
Yeah.
That was painful. But we're moving on.
All right, this is Mitch on the station.
This is Steve on the station.
And we are out.
Good night.
The Station Podcast was recorded and produced and edited by Jeff Fan at Infinite Productions in 2009. Very nice. The Station.